warlike at all times. Draw the line and allow no one over. When it threatens your life, it threatens your liberty and those of the people that you love, that's it. Gloves come off at that point, and we need to show them our collective war face. We're not having this. You've had your run. It's now over. Okay? All right. Thank you. David Rasnick, Dr. David Rasnick, was a member of the South African AIDS Advisory Panel. He has done extensive theoretical work on the aneuploidal theory of cancer and has founded several successful biotech companies. What you're about to hear is absolutely astounding. He's going to shatter some more propaganda. Let's welcome him. Let us welcome David Rasnick, Ph.D.
Good to meet you. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. It's my first time at Red Pill, and I'm going to be talking about South Africa a little bit, so I took the opportunity to wear one of my South African shirts. And I thought I would also wear my Australian hat made in Minnesota, too. Okay, so let's... I can see it right here, can't I? Well, during Reagan's first term in office, he was silent on AIDS. He didn't say a word about it until April 23rd, 1984, when a Health and Human Services press conference was hastily called to prevent AIDS from becoming a campaign issue. It was an election year in 1984. And yet, June 5th was the 40th anniversary of AIDS. And I have been studying AIDS from the absolute very beginning, even before it had a name, when I moved to San Francisco in September of 1980, all the way through that, before it even had a name, and it became GRID for gay-related immune deficiency. For politically correct purposes, it was changed to AIDS for acquired immune deficiency. Then you'll see it was changed to HIV/AIDS, and now it's officially HIV disease. I'm going to be talking about that. That press conference was held by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. It featured Robert Gallo and his AIDS virus. Didn't call it AIDS virus at that time. And it promised a vaccine in 2 years. Here it is now, 37 years later, and we're still waiting on that vaccine. And it set, this is the most crucial part of this, it set U.S. policy, on AIDS. AIDS by decree became contagious, sexually transmitted, caused by a retrovirus, originated in Africa, and is incurable. This policy is still U.S. policy and global policy to this day. And interestingly, after 37 years, there is still not a trace of evidence anywhere in the world that any of that is true. In fact, it's all false. I have been working with Peter Duisberg and a whole host of other people around the world trying to bring this up. And in South Africa, one reason why I was there numerous times. My wife and I even lived in South Africa, 2005 and 2006. And so we got to know things there, meet a lot of people. It was great, get these nice shirts. And I'll be telling a little bit of that story. Now, AIDS dogma, that's what this is. It's AIDS dogma. We have COVID dogma, we have SARS dogma, we have MERS dogma. These are all, we have Zika dogma, we have all these dogmas. And the thing about dogma is that they are ruthlessly defended. You cannot ask questions. Think about the Inquisition, any way you want to think about a dogma. Dogma means you cannot question it. That automatically erases science. The world has already spent over $2 trillion on AIDS, just $2 trillion. American taxpayers, just us, American taxpayers, not pharmaceutical companies, not testing companies, nobody else. We've spent over $500 billion since 1982. And you can see it always goes up. The budget always goes up over the years. The last year I was able to get a number was 2019. I couldn't get a number last year. But I guarantee you can see it goes up every year. Now, it doesn't matter who you are. You can be a citizen or you can be a head of state. Both Bushes and Clinton, either during the campaign or while in office, proposed to reduce the AIDS budget. It was just escalating out of nowhere, and the numbers of people who had AIDS were so trivial that the money made no sense. But not one of them did anything about it. They mentioned it once in each case, and then never said another word, and they always increased the budget after that. Money is the weapon here. Money is, when you have trillions of dollars at stake, that is the force behind silencing people. Institutional science died during the 80s because of this, and it's dead now. It's totally dead. There is no reliable institutional science in the United States. They're good scientists, individual human beings, but the institutions of science are totally unreliable. They're just totally destroyed by money. Money has killed science, probably throughout institutional science, probably throughout the world, certainly in the United States. Academic freedom is gone in the United States. It doesn't matter if you're a scientist or what, it doesn't matter, it's totally gone. Scientific discourse is censored. We know a lot about censorship. The public is certainly learning about censorship with the COVID stuff. You question anything, you're off YouTube or whatever it is, you know you're gone. So you're getting to experience what I and many of my colleagues around the world have known since AIDS. I guarantee you this has been going on for a long, long time, even before I was a scientist. But I learned about it in the 80s. You're learning about it. Maybe a lot of you knew about it earlier, but you certainly know it now. Now, if you're an individual, an academic, a regular scientist, if you work for a medical profession or a big corporation or pharmaceutical company, or if you look at it here in South Dakota right now, all the people, you know, outside just don't wear masks, do whatever they want. But the poor people that work in the hotels where a lot of us are staying, you know, those people are forced to wear those masks. And it's so obvious to everybody, this is stupid and ridiculous, you know. All the people in here can be normal, but the poor employees, you know, look at them. And I feel sorry for them. I want to stress this point. I learned it with the AIDS epidemic. The only good thing that comes out of these global catastrophes are all the wonderful people that you get to meet. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. But, you know. I'm eating up my time here, so keep going. I'm sorry, folks. Peter Duisberg, a good friend of mine, his 742-page book, Inventing the AIDS Virus, documented the global governmental, institutional, pharmaceutical infrastructure that rules the world today. It was put into place during the 80s and 90s, and Anthony Fauci was the guy who was really spearheading it now. At that time, Anthony Fauci started at the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease in November of 1984. Since 1984, he's turned old diseases, drug diseases, the AIDS diseases. The CDC understood as early as 1982 that what was happening in these gay men was a consequence of chronic recreational drug use. CDC acknowledged that in writing in 1982. They had to drop it in 1984 because of government policy. But they understood that. And now Fauci has turned old diseases, drug diseases, even non-diseases into AIDS. We'll see examples of that. And COVID, using the magic wand of technology to say that somebody is sick or has a deadly disease and they have no symptoms. This is a partial list of the nearly 30 diseases and conditions that have little or nothing to do with each other. But again, with the magic wand of technology, let's go, where are you? What did I do wrong here? Hold it down, there we go. Antibody test turns it into AIDS. That was one of the first things. That's one way you can use a laboratory test to turn things that you recognize as something else. See that list of diseases? It's just a partial list. You have those, a doctor treats you one way if you don't have antibodies to HIV. If you have antibodies to HIV, then they treat you with antiretroviral drugs and call it AIDS. This goes throughout Fauci's whole career at the NIAID. Now, in 1993, they added three new things to the AIDS-defining list. They added a laboratory test, which is a non-disease, at the top for fewer than 200 CD4 T cells per microliter of blood. They added TB, and they also added cervical cancer because women obstinately refuse to get AIDS. And through the 1990s, 9 out of 10 AIDS cases were men. Most of them were gay men, and IV drug users were the heterosexual men, typically, that got it. But then they were able, with this definition change, the most dangerous thing, certainly important to this story, is that it led directly to other non-diseases being turned into disease, in particular COVID-19. By using a PCR test. Just that alone, if somebody is positive on a PCR test, perfectly healthy, they're an AIDS case. Now, cases used to be you had symptoms of a disease and that made you a case. It wasn't a test that did that. Now we have technology using these tests that determine whether or not you have this or you have that. Now, here is the data from the 1997 HIV/AIDS surveillance report. We're going to be talking about this when 1997 was sort of pivotal. And this is where, remember, 1993, the most dramatic thing you see on there is that threefold increase in AIDS cases from between December 31st, 1992, and the end of the first quarter in 1993. It's a threefold increase in AIDS cases. And then even with that, it started going down. All right, now let's compare that figure on the right from page 25 with the cover page of that same document. The 1997 HIV/AIDS surveillance report, year-end edition. And this is an example, just one of a whole host of examples of how the CDC misleads and deceives the public. If you, obviously all you have to do is see on page 25 is real data. I want to stress that's actual numbers of people. Whatever definition and whatever they use, at least they did something to count people. And that's the one on the right. The one on the left, these are estimated incidents. They're computer generated. And they imply very different things. The one on the right is what you would expect from a definition change. It adds something. And it jumps up, boosts up really fast. But on the cover page, you see the smooth curve, those data points, computer generated, and they peak at the definition change, 1993, and then they start going down. So you do not see on the cover this dramatic jump that was, that happened simply by a definition change. And the red line there shows the leveling off of the real data, and it should have been that way on the image to the left over there. Now, given the policy, the United States policy, we started this, that AIDS began in Africa, the U.S. pressured the World Health Organization to come up with a definition of AIDS in Africa without the bother or the expense of testing for antibodies to HIV. They didn't have to use technology in Africa. They couldn't afford to do it there. So they asked the World Health Organization, we need a definition of AIDS in Africa without these tests. So what they did, and you can get away with just about anything in Africa, they used the diseases of poverty and malnutrition that are common around the world, fever, diarrhea, persistent cough, weight loss, and TB. That's what, if you go to see poverty, you'll see those things. And all they did was redefine it. They called it African AIDS. That's the Bangui definition of AIDS in Africa that is there today. The reason they had to do it was because the drug diseases in the United States that gay men were suffering, they didn't have in Africa, so they had to come up with some sort of way to count AIDS cases in Africa that were different. In fact, 90% of Americans that have AIDS by definition and Africans that have by Bangui definition, if they got a plane and went to the other continent, 90% wouldn't have AIDS. Just by definition. And in fact, if you go to Canada does not use the CD4, fewer than 200 CD4 cells per microliter of blood. They don't accept that there. That was that 1993 boost in the definition change. So if you're an American, and that's your only thing that you have diagnosing you as AIDS, you go to Canada, you officially don't have AIDS anymore. And here's how the CDC turns the flu. I don't know, many of you may have heard that the CDC no longer reports or keeps track of flu cases anymore of last year. And the symptoms of the flu, if you go to their website, you'll see the symptoms of the flu and COVID-19 are identical. There they are right there. That comes from their website. So how do you tell the difference between the flu and COVID-19? The magic wand of technology again. The famous or infamous PCR test for this SARS-CoV-2 virus now turns the flu into COVID-19, just like we could turn all those other diseases into AIDS with an antibody test. Now we use a fancy PCR test to do that. And the reason I have question marks, see if you can see them, yeah, question marks on the COVID-2 is for this reason here. How does that show up there? It's kind of hard to read, isn't it? They didn't like the, I actually had a white background. The CDC, just this past December, acknowledged, and it's under that red line down at the bottom, but I made bigger type there of what it says. No quantified virus isolates of 2019 nCoV, that's a synonym for SARS-CoV-2, none of that virus was available for CDC use at the time the test was developed, the PCR test. They had no reference standard, and they still don't to this day. In fact, no place in the world, people are looking on a daily basis. There's one particular person that keeps updating us on the next latest country that has no data on isolation or production of SARS-CoV-2. It doesn't exist any place in the world. All right, and the CDC even itself admits that. Our friend, Professor Sam Schlongo, he died in an automobile accident in 2006, shortly after Terry and I, my wife, left South Africa to come back to the United States. Sam taught me some Zulu. Iaids ink, ianituka, isizwe, siyatukwa. Loosely translated, AIDS ink has turned the people into jackasses. COVID-19 has done the same thing on a global scale. Now, I climbed the little hill outside of Medunsa Medical University of Southern Africa. In that outline there, that's where Sam worked and where I spent a lot of time. Built a lab there, and we were there from 2005-2006. Now, on the other side of that hill where I was taking this picture, there's this township, Soshanguve. They had millions of people, I think it was 4 million people at the time, desperately poor people on the other side of me where I was taking that picture. Terry and I went over there a number of times. We had good friends over there. And there's millions of people, desperately, desperately poor. They just get tin or whatever and build these little shacks, and you drive through there and it just breaks your heart. And you're all over that country in South Africa. Now, again, U.S. policy is, which you cannot question, you cannot challenge in any way, is that AIDS started in Africa, and the worst hit country is South Africa, and this is South Africa. While we were there, the occupancy rate at Medunsa was 40% to 60%, and they were planning on shutting down parts of the hospital that weren't being used. Okay, they're supposed to have this AIDS epidemic there. All right. By the way, I should tell you that Africa doubled its population, sub-Saharan Africa, it's over a billion people now, during the AIDS epidemic in South Africa. They don't have a population that's falling. I mean, it's population explosion. And the other thing is, they didn't have an AIDS ward, but they had an ARV clinic. So they didn't even have an AIDS ward there. And that's that tiny little circle off to the right there. It's an ARV clinic. And as it would happen, that's an ARV clinic. It was on the opposite side of the parking lot from Sam's office, which was behind me taking this picture, and it's closed half the time. One day when it was opened, I went in there, and you see all these healthy people that were in there. I don't know what was going on that day. They might have had a lot of people going through brochures, but these are healthy people there. I have seen them bring very sick people, had to carry very sick people in there. you know, but there weren't that many. The thing is that they don't do HIV testing throughout almost all of Africa, except places like Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Pretoria, where, you know, the urban areas are, and that's about it. And they'll pay people, they encourage people to get tested for antibodies to HIV by paying them if they're positive. You say, what do we do now? We're paying people $500 to get a COVID injection, you know, or give them a lottery ticket and see if they'll win $1 million, you know, and they're paying them to do that. That's one way they can encourage them to come in there and take the money and get tested, but they do not take the antiretroviral drugs. That's what ARV stands for. This is from the second South African AIDS conference in 2005 when we were still there in South Africa. And this was a study, it was published then in 2005, a two-year study of 25 of the largest companies in South Africa with ARV programs to prevent AIDS, you know, prophylactically. They do that all over the world now. So few people with AIDS, but they have all these drugs and everything. They use it prophylactically. They give you these AIDS drugs to help you prevent getting HIV or transmitting it. And they had these programs in South Africa, but they reported that 99.4% of 750,000 employees chose not to take the antiretroviral drugs. The authors of this study said, they concluded, South Africans are slow on the uptake. You know, well, there's another reason. South Africans are not stupid. This article, The Ugly Side of ARVs, was published also in 2005 in Nairobi, and here's some quotes from it. Seen as the key intervention in prolonging the lives of those infected with HIV, antiretroviral drugs are now turning out to be lethal. Doctors tell stories of witnessing patients lose lives as they fail to triumph over life-threatening ARV side effects. These side effects become deadly if those dispensing the drugs lack the skills to diagnose them in time. Although this is the reality, some of the doctors do not want to speak openly about it for fear of creating panic. Does that sound familiar to all the stories that we've been seeing with COVID and with what's going on in the hospitals? Vaccines and things. Here's one thing I want to point out. Not a single antiretroviral drug, there's over 30 of them now, and they call them combination therapy, HART for highly active antiretroviral therapy. Not a single one has ever been demonstrated to prevent AIDS, to cure AIDS, to stop transmission or whatever. They have no evidence whatever that these things do anybody any good. Does that sound familiar with the SARS-CoV-2 injections? The same thing. AIDS set the precedent for all this stuff. And this is GlaxoSmithKline. At this time, there is no evidence that Zygen will help you live longer or have fewer of the medical problems associated with HIV and AIDS. Why take the drug? Merck's Crixivan. It is not yet known whether Crixivan will extend your life or reduce your chances of getting other illnesses associated with HIV. Boehringer Ingelheim's Veramune. At present, there are no results from controlled clinical trials evaluating the effects of Veramune on the incidence of opportunistic infections and survival. GlaxoSmithKline. There have been no clinical trials conducted on Combivir. Sound familiar, folks? All right. The CDC's own data show that these drugs are toxic. I mean, you do not have to be a scientist to look at this graph once you understand X, Y, and graphs of the axes and all that means. But basically, down on the horizontal axis at the bottom, it's the year. So this is the CDC's data. Doesn't matter in this particular case. The AIDS cases are the computer-generated cases, but that's what they're showing. And then the deaths, one thing you don't do with computers, I mean, one thing you can't hide, bodies. You know, either you have a dead body or you don't. So the death data is pretty solid. And we see here that the ARVs, the combination therapy, it was two nucleoside analogs and a protease inhibitor, that started towards the end, the last quarter of 1996. That's that blue line there, that vertical blue line, HART available late 1996. The natural decline in AIDS cases was starting before that. It peaked in 1993 and started going down as we saw earlier. And AIDS deaths had peaked in 1995, and it was going down steeply before the introduction of the heart. Now, within just months of the introduction of heart, that natural decline in AIDS death stopped. And it started leveling off, and over recent years it's been increasing, and we'll show that it's even getting worse than that. That is clear data. It should have done just the opposite. The AIDS cases should have kept going down, even the computer-generated one, but they leveled off. And certainly the AIDS deaths shouldn't have stopped declining. They should have gone down even faster. But they didn't. They stopped declining, and they leveled off. All right? That's CDC's own data right there. But who goes to these documents? This is another study. It said combination of antiretroviral therapy places patients with HIV disease at high risk of adverse drug reactions. Severe hepatitis has been reported with all of the currently available classes of antiretroviral agents. Not surprisingly, liver failure has become the leading cause of death among HIV-positive Americans. AZT was the first antiretroviral drug approved by Anthony Fauci. He really, really pushed it very fast in the late 1980s. And the estimates are the AZT killed probably 300,000 gay men in the late 80s and early 90s. Peter Duesberg bought a bottle of AZT from Sigma Chemical Company, and he kept the label of that. And the warning to the left of the skull and crossbones reads, toxic by inhalation, in contact with skin, and if swallowed. Target organs, blood, bone, marrow. If you feel unwell, seek medical advice. Show the label where possible, wear suitable protective clothing. If you're HIV positive, your bottle of AZT looks like this. AZT was not it was invented in the 1960s. It was so toxic that it was never used as chemotherapy. In fact, the inventor didn't even patent it because it was so toxic. And that was the first AIDS drug. A doctor who prescribes cancer chemotherapy for the life of a cancer patient would be guilty of malpractice and probably lose his license. Might even go to jail. But if you're HIV positive or have a Bangui disease, the standard of care is to treat you with these drugs for life. That's still today. In fact, most people that get the antiretroviral drugs for HIV have no symptoms of AIDS at all. It's prophylactic. They give it to all these gay guys so they don't transmit HIV, they don't get HIV, and they don't transmit it to other people. You know, and they're doing this around the world. They give these drugs to people who have no symptoms of disease. Here's just some of the diseases and death. I mean, the ARVs actually cause AIDS-defining diseases. Again, remember, AIDS diseases are caused by drugs anyway, usually recreational drugs, but the anti-HIV drugs will cause those too, plus a whole host of other diseases. In 1997, this was the last year that the CDC stopped recording, cataloging all of the AIDS-defining diseases. That's that middle, the clinical diagnosis, right there in the middle. And you can see that the largest was people had no symptoms of disease. That was that 1993 definition change. Fewer than 200 CD4 T cells per microliter of blood. 61% of all cases had no symptoms of disease in 1997. And this is last year they started telling it. And you'll see that they had, down here at the very bottom, I don't know if my little light will line up down there, let's see. I'll go backwards once. That cervical cancer accounted for 1%. So those women just still won't get AIDS no matter what you try to do. They just won't get it. All right. Now AIDS, this is when AIDS became HIV and AIDS, HIV AIDS, not just AIDS, HIV AIDS, to conceal the fact that since 1993, well over half of all new cases in the United States were disease-free, had no symptoms at all. Nowadays, they've even eliminated that in this country. They just call it HIV disease. To hide the fact that ARVs cause AIDS diseases and death, a new disease was invented. It's called immune reconstitution syndrome, IRS, easy to remember. Immune reconstitution syndrome. And IRS, this is the definition of it. It only appears after you start taking the antiretroviral drugs. The reason is because the diseases, a lot of them are AIDS, and they don't want, you know, they want to say these are reconstituting your immune system. So here's the definition of immune reconstitution? Is it that you're getting healthier, you're getting better, your immune system is actually recouping? No, it's two lab tests. One, either an increase in the CD4 T cells, because your T cells, your immune cells are going up, so you must be better, even if you're in your deathbed. That's immune reconstitution. Decrease in viral load, HIV. In other words, if you quantify, use a PCR test for viral load. If it goes down, you've got to be getting better, because HIV is what's making you sick. Well, so the question is, like, was it flu or COVID? Well, is it AIDS or is it IRS? If you have any of these diseases or conditions and you happen to have antibodies to HIV, by definition, AIDS. That's AIDS, all right? Now, if you start taking the ARVs and any or all of these things pop up only after you start taking the antiretroviral drugs, it's not AIDS, it's IRS. That clever little trick there? And this is just a list to show you that the diseases that are attributed to IRS just keep growing over the years. The more they do these drugs, the more toxicity they see from these things. The toxicity of the COVID-19 injections in the USA as of the week before this week, it's actually now, the deaths are actually over 5,000 now for COVID-19. But at that time, it was over 4,000 deaths, about almost a quarter million of adverse events, 65,000 reports of anaphylaxis, and you can see the rest of them, Bell's palsy and all this other sorts of stuff. And they just keep going up. There's more. The VAERS is just a system, a voluntary a submission of your adverse events to the CDC. And the CDC funded a study in Harvard with Ross Lazarus. It was published in 2011. The study was to get an idea of how efficient VAERS was, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, actually captures those people that have adverse events. Well, he reported he was looking at drugs and also at vaccines, but let's just look at the vaccines right now. Fewer than 1% of the vaccine adverse events are ever reported to the VAERS. So if you want to get a more realistic number of what's going on, multiply these numbers here by 100, and you'll get a much better estimate of the toxicity of these vaccines in the United States. Now, TAC is Treatment Action Campaign, and they were, when I was there, my friend Sam Schlongo told me the government had found that they were funded to the tune of about $20 million. It was a pharmaceutical company via an intermediary that was funding these guys. And the U.S. government was behind it too. And they had to counter, remember I told you South Africans are not stupid. They don't take those drugs. So their role here was to counter this hesitancy or this resistance or whatever you want to call it for these drugs, just like we have people trying to countering the hesitancy or the resistance to these vaccines. And this was one of their little flyers trying to counteract immune reconstitution syndrome, in other words, trying to explain it away. And I'll show you, highlight there, I don't know if you can read it there, but I'll read it for you. This is the words they put in this guy's mouth. I got sick with TB after starting ARV treatment because the TB that was sleeping in my body took a chance to wake up as my immune system began to recover. I mean, that says it all. All right, now I'm not going to read all these things. This was just a list, and it's just, well, maybe you can see it. It just shows the timeline and the various similarities between AIDS on the left and COVID-19 on the right. You know, you can just pick some of them like up. Fauci was behind all this stuff, by the way. He was there at the very beginning. He's there with all this COVID stuff. 1984, drug diseases redefined as viral disease. We have RNA fragments defined as COVID-19. There's no virus, so they use RNA fragments. 1993, laboratory tests turns non-diseases into AIDS. 2020, PCR test turns the flu into COVID-19. AZT was approved in 1987 in only 20 months. Normally, I can tell you from my experience in the pharmaceutical biotech world that it takes about 10 years. Well, 2 to 10 years to get FDA approval, closer to the 10 years. In vaccine, it takes 10 to 20 years to get a vaccine approved. So here we had 20 months for the AZT to get approval, full approval FDA, and the emergency use authorization for the COVID vaccines, 9 months. 9 months, and no toxicity, no nothing. There's nothing known about those things. No clinical trials show ARVs effective. No study shows the jabs are infected. ARVs don't prevent AIDS or death. The jabs don't prevent COVID-19 or death. ARVs are highly toxic. VAERS shows the jabs are dangerous and deadly. Got a minute left. Advertising hides adverse reactions. Advertising hides adverse reactions with COVID-19. Testing is inaccurate. Disease-free cases. Data manipulated and inaccurate. Same for COVID. South Africa paid to be HIV positive. People are being paid to change death certificates to COVID-19. They're being paid to classify patients as COVID-19, and they're being paid to be injected with these poisonous drugs. And this is the very last slide. Robert F. Kennedy, this is his new book, The Real Anthony Fauci. It's scheduled to come out, released June 20th. I've seen chapters 1 and 3, and it's a hell of a book. I can't wait it comes out. And so they're going to start releasing, it looks like, chapters, bits and pieces of it, free on the Children's Health Defense website to try to promote it. Now that Fauci's in a little bit of hot water right now, they want to take advantage of it. They're promoting it. If they get up to 10,000 people that log in, pre-order this, they'll go to first, number one, on New York Times bestseller list. That's it, folks. 0 seconds. Give it to them. Yeah.